Good morning. Before I start my comments, I'd just like to tell a little bit about myself. I'm a farmer still. I've just finally got most of my corn and soybeans replanted after all this rain. But I think of what Tom and Gerald said about ethanol and biodiesel and about the stick-to-itiveness of farmers over the past few years, past 20 years, of making sure that we worked really hard to get that out there. Involved in the soybean group, it was interesting because we always just wanted about another dime for our bushel of corn and maybe get rid of that soybean oil excess, and it's just taken off, and that's exciting. But in September of 2006, I began my job as regional administrator for EPA Region 7, where I see regulatory and non-regulatory programs in Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska. Our mission is to protect human health, the environment, an important mission that I am proud to be a part of. President Bush and EPA Administrator Steve Johnson are committed to accelerating the pace of environmental protection while maintaining economic growth for our nation. This morning, I want to talk about three important issues. One, partnerships that provide innovative solutions to our environmental challenges. Two, EPA's role in renewable fuels and air water quality challenges. And awards for those going above and beyond to protect the environment and public health. Let's begin with working to build a stronger partnership between EPA and agriculture and the growing biofuels industry, which is focused on achieving environmental outcomes. You are. Our goal is to develop strong working relationships with you to find common sense solutions to environmental challenges. We need to communicate program information, be available to respond to questions, and understand the intersections between agriculture, biofuels, and the environment. Our first priority is to solve problems, not create them. Now, that's contrary to what most of you think. Helping people solve problems gains their cooperation and develops a positive working relationship that can benefit everyone in the future. A heavy-handed approach might solve a problem, but will not gain respect or cooperation for the future. Effective regulators can be fair, even-handed, but honestly, we don't really roll over. If we need to be forceful with the bad apples, we can be. We do that for two reasons: to address actions causing health or environmental damage, and basically out of respect for those people who are doing it right, who go above and beyond. Now, I know this one's important. The second message is renewable fuels. We've had a major role in dealing with one of America's top priorities, reducing dependency on foreign oil. We're addressing our nation's energy, growing energy demand in a way that supports farmers, rural America, supports our goal for a clean environment, and supports greater energy security. Production of biofuels is a critical part of the President's national goal of reducing consumption of gasoline by 20% over the next 10 years, by 2017. We will need to be responsive to the developing biofuel sector, while at the same time ensuring environmental protection. Of course, in Region 7, I've encouraged, this is interesting, I've encouraged the addition of hybrid vehicles to our fleet, flex fuel vehicles, biodiesel vehicles. President Bush has also directed federal agencies with more than 20 vehicles to reduce petroleum consumption by 2% each year and increase alternative fuel use by 10%. GSA's Fleet Management Division has delivered over 3,500 flex fuel vehicles and over 20 biodiesel vehicles to this region federal agencies. And this is being expanded clear across this country because we need to do it first. We've contributed to this effort by recently establishing the nation's first comprehensive renewable fuel standard, or the RFS. Under this program, the annual amount of required renewable fuel use will increase each and every year. So by the year 2012, over 7.5 billion gallons of fuel being pumped in gas tanks across this country will be made from homegrown crops and renewable resources. But you've gone way beyond that, and we expect you to keep working hard on that aspect. We also expect that the volume of renewable fuel will exceed tremendously in the next few years. So how really does this program work? American refiners, blenders, and importers are required to use a minimum volume of renewable fuel each year between 2007 and 2012. This minimum level or standard
is determined by a percentage of the total volume of fuel a company produces or imports and will increase every year. For example, 2007, 4.02% of all the fuel sold or dispensed for U.S. motorists will have to come from renewable sources. That's roughly about 4.7 billion gallons. And you're going to surpass that by a huge margin. In fact, Congress is looking at ways to expand that right today. As a farmer, I also understand the significance of the renewable fuel standard. This program will promote the use of fuels such as ethanol, biodiesel, which are largely produced from American crops, and result in an increase in farm income, especially for corn and soybean producers. The RFS also calls upon America's innovative spirit for providing incentives to spur advances in cutting-edge technology, what you're doing today, infrastructure, and farming methods. For example, we're excited about the real possibility of one day producing renewable fuel from agriculture and industrial byproducts, such as corn stalks, switchgrass, wood chips, even the DDGs that are left. A few years ago, I doubt too many people outside the Midwest looked at soybean or an ear of corn and saw its potential for powering their cars. Now, due to long-term efforts and investments by agriculture organizations like National Corn Growers, Soybean Association, and others, it is clear that these farm products and renewable fuels are the next step in our steady march towards ensuring that our air and water quality is protected. So let's talk about air quality improvements and some challenges. What does the RFS really mean for the environment? It means that increased use of renewable fuels under this RFS will prevent the release of greenhouse gas emissions. The use of ethanol and biodiesel will decrease benzene and carbon monoxide emissions. This program is estimated to cut petroleum use by up to 3.9 billion gallons a year and cut annual greenhouse gas emissions by up to 13.1 million metric tons by 2012. The equivalent of producing, about 2.5 million cars, just taking those off the road. Biodiesel provides lubricity benefits and actually life cycle greenhouse gas emission reductions. For example, B20 reduces greenhouse gas emissions by at least 10%. It reduces emissions of carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, particulate matter, PM, and sulfates and air toxins. We're also conducting further studies to really look at NOx emissions from biodiesel use. Now, as a soybean farmer, I use a lot of biodiesel, and most farmers out there do. It's grown tremendously. Ethanol, E85, made from corn, reduces life cycle greenhouse gas emissions and includes the energy to grow and process corn into ethanol by 15 to 20% compared to conventional gasoline. EPA's Tier 2 vehicle emission standards require flex fuel vehicles achieve the same low emission standards when E85 or gasoline is used in the vehicle. And you know, E85 is less volatile than gasoline, or even the low volume E10 blends, resulting in fewer evaporative emissions and better air quality. But there are some challenges. Many projects receive a comprehensive air quality review, in particular for NOx and VOC emissions and their contribution to ozone. With this accelerated growth in the industry, facilities need to ensure that good air quality is maintained in nearby metropolitan areas. We do have a new national ambient air quality standard for ozone now. And you've seen the maps, you've seen the news, and that will have a big impact in the future. But you can accomplish this, facilities can, by proper plant design and installation of air pollution controls, constructing after the air permits are granted, complying with permit requirements such as the permit limits that are on there, record keeping, reporting, and testing requirements. So in order to assist with these compliance needs, EPA is about to publish an ethanol guidance document that is multimedia, or cross water, air, all these issues, that will help identify the regulatory guidelines and the rules that you need to follow. We want to be your partner. We want you to come in and talk to us before you feel there's a need for us to talk to you. You can inquire about this booklet at the EPA booth we have here in the trade show. EPA's recent rule to revise permitting thresholds for ethanol plants does become effective on July 2nd, 2007. So consult with your state. Determine if they have a plan for using the new or allowing use of the new permitting thresholds. A partnership that is focused on reducing air pollution and developing innovations in fuel and energy use is what we call, in this area, the Blue Skyways Collaborative Initiative. It's a project that between Region 6 in Dallas and Region 7 here in Kansas City with Minnesota tossed in. It basically goes all the way from Canada down to Mexico. But the mission of the Blue Skyways Collaborative is to talk about air emissions, talk about not just in fuels, energy, but also about improving the quality of life in the heartland. The 10-state area is focused on voluntary mobile emissions and energy-related projects. To date, working with numerous partners, we've reduced over 40,000 tons of air pollutants, over 500,000 tons of greenhouse gas emissions, and 21 million gallons in fuel savings. That's tremendous. We may have more information about that, and we'd like to see you as a partner. If you've committed yourself to energy efficiency and air emission reduction, you can be a partner. Now let's talk about water a little bit. At EPA, we deal with water quality issues, but the water consumption can lead to water quantity issues. In my region, we have two states that deal with water quality issues, water quantity issues, and then we have two states that really haven't focused on that, and that's Iowa and Missouri, and they are focusing on it now. The ethanol production process can concentrate dissolved solids in effluent, resulting in challenges meeting water quality standards. Some plants are moving to zero discharge, which is exciting. And that addresses their water consumption and wastewater permit limitations. But also increasing biofuel production can result in interesting land changes. For example, Missouri, 26% increase in corn acres. And it's mostly converting from soybean acres. Cellulosic ethanol process research and then other biomass feedstocks will likely drive further changes in cropping practices. And changes in cropping practices may impact water quality. Not for the bad, but for the good. And that's what's exciting, because as we look at partnering with industry, with other groups out there, we want to talk to you about the changes you see, the changes you see in the industry, and how we can help. By working with you, we're really prepared to proactively address environmental compliance issues, which are going to arise because of the substantial growth of the industry. But beyond compliance, we're very interested in understanding and promoting sustainability and best practices in harvest, production, and distribution of biofuels. I think when Tom was up here, he did talk about the tremendous growth. You know, we need bins, we need trucks, we need that infrastructure built up for you. But when we use and we grow biocrops sustainably, they're good for our economy, they're good for our energy security, they're good for the environment, and they're good for the agriculture industry, and they're great for farmers. Now let's take a little bit of time, and I want to present two Energy Star CHP awards. It is my honor to have Mitch Essing, Technical Manager from Northeast Missouri Grain, LLC, and Dara Simler, Chairman of Atkins Energy, LLC, to receive these awards. What is CHP? Combined Heat and Power, or cogeneration. It's a highly efficient, clean, and reliable approach to generating power and thermal energy from a single fuel source. By installing a CHP system designed to meet the thermal electrical base loads of a facility, CHP can increase operational efficiency and decrease energy costs while reducing air pollution emissions. As most of you know, dry mill ethanol plants require large-scale, constant electricity and thermal loads, making these facilities an excellent fit for CHP. CHP technology is a cost-effective way to provide both steam and power for ethanol production. By utilizing CHP systems, ethanol facilities can reduce production costs by achieving approximately 15% reduction of energy intensity of the production. These highly efficient, economical systems can use a variety of fuels, including natural gas, coal, biomass, and improve the overall environmental benefits of greenhouse gases associated with ethanol production. The Energy Star CHP Award was established in 2000 to provide public recognition and support for organizations and institutions that install CHP systems that increase energy efficiency and reduce those emissions of greenhouse gases. To qualify for an Energy Star CHP Award, CHP systems must be in operation at least 1 year and achieve a minimum 5% fuel savings over comparable separate heat and power.